KALW.
We want to electrify everything to get rid of fossil fuels so that we can then provide all of our energy from renewable methods.
Today, we learn what it takes to get your home off gas.
Go to a solar company and say, hey, can you give us a 10% discount? You get 10 houses here.
A tour of decarbonized homes. Then singing about the wild side of love.
We've all had the relationship that's just, some of it is the relationship you always kind of dreamed about, and some of it's the relationship from hell.
A conversation with musician Alex Jordan, and we take a ride down the San Francisco Embarcadero.
Pedicabs are really silly, you know, so people get in and they're always giggling and having a blast, and they're feeling feisty, they're going to start grabbing your butt.
That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Burning fossil fuels is heating the planet. The year 2023 just slayed climate records. And while greenhouse gas emissions from transportation get a lot of attention, our homes and buildings are also a major contributor to climate change. So there's a big movement to get buildings off of gas. KALW climate reporter Mary Catherine O'Connor brings us a story about the efforts to plug Bay Area homes into that trend.
Hey, Bima.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks.
I'm visiting Bima Sheridan at his stately home in Berkeley. Wisteria blooms surround the front door, and the purple flowers complement the woodsy green of the house.
The original building was built in 1906 as an Edwardian with fancy trim.
But I'm not here for the architectural details. I'm here to see something Bima's way more excited about. His new heat pump.
Okay, so this is the outdoor unit.
Mounted alongside the house, this appliance looks like a smaller, boxier version of a conventional air conditioner. And it works like another appliance in your house, your fridge. But in addition to cooling, heat pumps also do the reverse, sending warm air into the building for heat during winter. And here's the big sell. Heat pumps run on electricity, and they're very efficient.
We want to electrify everything to get rid of fossil fuels so that, you know, we can then provide all of our energy from renewable methods, solar electric, wind, hydro.
Bima has a background in solar and is a climate activist. He's also a landlord. He has tenants in 3 apartments, 1 below his living space and 2 in the back. So installing this system, which serves the whole building, was a big ordeal. We'll get to the cost later, but Bima says it was worth it.
I think this is the future of heating and cooling.
Local lawmakers agree. And back in 2019, Bima's hometown did something that thrust gas appliances into the national discourse.
New at 6, Berkeley has become one of the first cities to pass an ordinance that would ban natural gas in all new construction. KPIX 5's Don.
It also sparked a culture war, stoked by conservative media. Here's a clip from Fox News.
You're living in Berkeley. How are you supposed to cook or, say, warm the water in your shower without natural gas?
Yeah, this is the stupidity of green philosophy when it's taken to the extreme.
The restaurant industry also had a meltdown about not cooking with gas. It sued and won.
New at 10 tonight, the city of Berkeley lost its latest legal battle to enforce a ban on natural gas.
This kept some cities from imposing their own bans. But San Francisco and many others still have electrification measures on the books. Bima thinks these kinds of regional bans aren't enough, though. He says we gotta think bigger, too, like about where the electricity to power these new appliances comes from.
And of course, the production of carbon dioxide really is the big problem. It's a huge 800-pound gorilla, right? Switching our production of electricity to renewable.
That's the vision. Reality, however, is that electrifying everything inside your home is complicated. Bima's project took a lot of time and money. And while there are a lot of rebates and incentives right now, they can be hard to navigate. Bima got one from the state, but he had to act really quickly.
I jumped on it.
He heard the money ran out in minutes.
So that just shows you kind of how much demand there is?
The rebate was not nothing. Nearly $8,000 for water and space heating for 3 units. But it didn't cover things like labor and opening up walls for plumbing and wiring. All told, his budget was around $70,000. But this investment won't necessarily lower utility bills.
I think what's also making it more difficult is that PG&E has recently raised electric rates. So yes, heat pumps are more efficient, but because the electric rates are so much higher, you may not actually see a big difference there.
Plus, folks like Bhima, who have professional experience in clean energy and just happen to be landlords too, they're unicorns. So the house-by-house approach doesn't scale quickly, even in a super green town like Berkeley. In Oakland, there's a different approach.
Hi, my name is Therese Peffer, and I am the Associate Director of the California Institute for Energy and Environment at UC Berkeley. I'm a researcher.
Therese manages research projects, and there's this one called EcoBlock. It's helping groups of homeowners approach energy retrofits as a collective.
Let's take a block, especially an older urban block, where you have these older homes that are just sitting there and they have no insulation, single pane windows, and all of that.
Those are the homes, after all, that really need energy savings.
Let's perform energy efficient retrofits, electrification, rooftop solar.
The project is complex. There are 15 buildings involved and lots of coordination between the city, contractors, PG&E, and the California Energy Commission. That's who's funding it. All of this takes trust building.
We had one homeowner drop out. There were a lot of concerns. You know, some of it was a bit of fear. Oh gosh, you're going to have the city of Oakland coming with their building inspectors to look at this. I'm not comfortable with that.
The EcoBlock residents did strike gold with free electrification upgrades. And Therese hopes neighbors elsewhere will take a cue from this project by trying to buy in bulk.
You know, go to a solar company and say, hey, can you give us a 10% discount? You get 10 houses here.
Plus, they can learn together.
If you don't know anyone with a heat pump, if you don't know anyone who's ever had solar, you can't ask them. And so the idea about going into a neighborhood, you're starting to get those conversations happening. And that's what we started seeing over the course of the project.
Bhima Sheridan is already talking to other landlords about making the switch. And he thinks eventually all gas will be in the past.
At some point, PG&E, or really all the utilities, are going to say, okay, how much money are we going to put into this aging gas system that we know is going to be shut down?
The Bay Area Air Quality Management District recently took the first step. Starting in 2027, new rules will gradually phase out gas furnaces and hot water heaters in all homes and apartments, not just new builds. So, whether you're chomping at the bit to start electrifying, or you find this all about as interesting as doing your taxes, the heat pump wave is coming. In Berkeley, I'm Mary Catherine O'Connor for Cross Currents.
You can learn more about electrification rebates and resources available to homeowners and renters at klw.org/crosscurrents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. For artist Alex Jordan, music runs deep in his roots. His father was a high school music teacher in San Mateo County, and he discovered his great-grandfather's swing-era songbook. That inspired him to explore a variety of American music genres. Alex plays multiple instruments, and he's shared the stage with members of the Grateful Dead. His solo album is Queen Kerosene. It's an eclectic mix of genres, including roots music and heartland rock and roll. And his lyrics come from what's on his heart. Alex Jordan spoke with KALW's Janae Darden.
Alex, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So you play different instruments that comes across in the sound of your own music because it's a blend of like Americana and rock and roll and roots. Is it difficult to play so many genres of music, especially when the music industry likes to pigeonhole artists?
You know, an advantage I think we have in the Bay Area, because bands like the Grateful Dead were sort of eclectic by nature, there is a little bit of a, I guess I don't think about it as often, you know, about, you know, oh, I should get good at this one thing. And I do notice when I go to like the East Coast and things like that, there's an amazing wealth of talent back East and in the South and in the Midwest, just, you know, all these, and in Colorado, just all over the country. But you go and there's a lot of places where they kind of play one thing. Meanwhile, out here, we have hardly strictly bluegrass festival, and a lot of old timers refer to it as hardly any bluegrass festival because it's just remarkably eclectic. And I think that's probably a West Coast thing. And so I don't think of it as hard. I think of it as necessary.
And you mentioned the Grateful Dead and being a Deadhead, and you've performed with Bob Weir and Phil Lesh, and they're both founding members of the Grateful Dead. What was that like to perform with people that you looked up to musically?
Oh Lord, I've done it. I've talked too much. Said what was on my mind. Did a shock or offend you?
At the time, I was in a band, Midnight North, with Phil Lesh's son. And so the very first time I played with them was sort of a not quite audition, you know, more of a sit-in. And this is up at Terrapin Crossroads in San Rafael, which is no more. And that was Phil Lesh's restaurant. And I went to go sit in with the band, but Phil wasn't going to be there. He had a show that day at the Greek. And so there, I wasn't going to see him. You know, it was a day show, those, or evening or something like that. And halfway through the set with the band, in walks Phil and his wife, Jill. And I was just sitting there going, oh my gosh. You know, I was, because I just wasn't prepared for it. And he sat there and I was singing harmonies with them, and it was a sit-in. So I had learned their music and learned their harmonies, but we didn't know each other. And we start singing harmonies on some of their songs. And then Graham from the band says, let's do Friend of the Devil. I was like, oh God, I'm going to do a Grateful Dead song with a member watching.
Wow.
And we started the harmony, and I'm trying not to stare at Phil. And he sits up straight and closes his eyes and listens intently. I was like, oh my God, you know, just like, I hope it's good. And I guess it was, I got the job with the band. But fast forward probably 5-6 months, I was in the band and our bass player was out of town, and they said, hey, Phil's going to play with us tonight. Okay. You know, that's it. It was just what we were doing. And, I remember musically we were jamming to start the set and just what we kind of jammed on and learning how he plays and what he hears and what he responds to or doesn't respond to, and like where you sit musically in the picture or where you don't sit musically in the picture. It was very fascinating.
I want to talk about your album, Queen Kerosene, which is also the title of the lead single from your album. Talk about how that song came together and what's the meaning behind it. We want the tea, Alex. Okay, because it's a part in the song where you said you and Queen Kerosene were driving to San Francisco and she left you and took the car. So I want to know, what's this?
Okay.
What's the inspiration behind Queen Kerosene? She lit you up.
It was exciting, and then it was terrible.
We've all dated somebody like that.
that's what it's about. Like, we've all had the person that makes us feel like, oh my God, this is real special, but you're sort of on the front of the roller coaster going, is this really, did I do this on purpose? Am I really here? You know, because we're about to go down this hill and I'm the first one there.
The night I met Queen Kerosene was a hot and humid drag through New York City. I could hardly breathe. She let herself into my car. We drove until the sun came up behind us, with nowhere to be. And even though we're moving fast, I knew the ride could never last. But when I worry, she just laughed. We went to Houston, we went to Spain, went behind the lines and took fire.
and the wind's in your face, and it's exciting and terrifying at the same time. And that's sort of the ride. We've all had the relationship that's just, you know, some of it is the relationship you always kind of dreamed about, and some of it's the relationship from hell. And I think that the times I've had that experience, I have felt in retrospect like it was for the best. Like, oh, okay, I got something out of it that I value, that is important to who I am today, that I might not have experienced had I not gone on the ride.
You mentioned earlier about being in, you know, you played with different people, you played in a band. What made you want to go solo?
If I'm being honest about it, I had a really great time and a really great run with that band. And I was ready to do my own thing. I just didn't know what that felt like yet. And I was interested in, I had songs and I was writing and I was working, but you know, they had two songwriters and two lead singers and so there wasn't really space for it. And so I was probably, in retrospect, I was probably frustrated because I wanted to do something, but I hadn't really had an opportunity to do it yet. So I hadn't really done it yet. And so we sort of decided that at the end of the year in 2019 that to part ways. It caught me a little bit off guard at the time, but in retrospect, it was kind of the right thing. And I think I might have made the same decision thereafter. But a few months later, before any of us had started touring for the year, and I was, you know, working on an East Coast tour and all that, the pandemic hit. And that changed everybody's scope and plans.
What's your favorite song on the album?
You know, the track that's probably my favorite is Tidefall. I can't get enough of those horns. And I love what they do. It's, you know, it's one of those things. It's not going to be everyone's favorite, but it's the funk tune. And I just love the way the horns have that ending. It's so fun to listen to. And I didn't write the horn charts for this record. I did for my last one. So it's cool to me. You know, it's really interesting. And I think it's very fun to listen to them play.
Time is weighing on my shoulder, carving lines into my face. There's a path to getting older. Can we please ease up the pace?
That was musician Alex Jordan speaking with KALW's Janae Darden. That interview was co-produced by Porfirio Rangel. Alex's album is called Queen Kerosene.
There are schemes in every schemer, and a man to play the part, and I watch how they go to the ocean below. Oh, time is giving me away in pieces every day. Please take it slow.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Thursday is Bike to Anywhere Day, a Bay Area tradition, and part of a month-long celebration of two-wheeled travel. So today we're revisiting a story that takes us on a sonic cruise down San Francisco's Embarcadero in a pedicab. Reporter Leah Rose takes us along.
You want to hop in? Go on, little buddy. All right, folks.
My name's Kobe Wilson. I'm a pedicab driver. I've been doing it since the end of last summer, so almost a year. Before I was a pedicabber, I worked at the Fairmont Hotel and I had benefits, dental, vision, health, insurance, and I was making really good money. So I definitely took a pay cut to be a pedicab driver in the beginning because I started working here in the winter when it's terrible as far as the amount of money you make. But the quality of life was so much better. That's what really sold it for me, is that I'm making less money, but I get to work whenever I want. I get to be outside rather than working, you know, nights in the basement of a fancy hotel serving rich people. I'm just so much happier now in every way. So we post up in different places down at Fisherman's Wharf or at the ferry building or at Pier 33 where the Alcatraz boat lets off. And we just wait for people to come up, ask them if they want to ride, and people hop in. The other strategy is to just ride back and forth up and down the Embarcadero and just wait till someone hops in. Let's go make some money. Pedicab rides. I mean, pretty much everybody riding around here is a tourist, or walking around here is a tourist, so you just gotta kind of convince them that you're not a con man. that this is a legit thing that you do and that they'll get in. Like here, okay, we got a couple cabs coming by. We got what? Some middle-aged ladies, you know, they have some shopping bags and backpacks. Obviously tourists. They look like they want to ride. They're having a good time. So that guy made a good call to ask them. It does take a little while to learn where everything is. And this is a part of the neighborhood or part of the city I'd never been to. You know, I live out in the sunset and I think I went to Pier 39 once when I was like 6 years old, but who comes? Like, you're from San Francisco. Who comes to the Embarcadero? No one from here. So it's funny when you're first starting out and people go, oh, so where's a good place to eat around here? And I go, well, not around here. Pedicabs are really silly, you know, so people get in and they're always giggling and having a blast. And so if they're feeling feisty, they're gonna start grabbing your butt. It's right there. I mean, look, you know, I'm sitting on that seat right there. It's my butt's in your face the whole time. Say, hey, that's $5 every pinch. And they go, ha ha ha. We have a little chart right here that says, here, let's see what it says. It says, thank you for choosing Cabrio Taxi. We have fully functional signals and brake lights. A seatbelt is available and we encourage you to use it. These are the rules here. Do not stand on the pedicab or sit on the fiberglass carriage. So, no sitting on the edges here. We're not responsible for reckless behavior. People like to get wild in here sometimes, especially when they've been drinking. Oh, there's actually a funny story yesterday. One of our riders was coming back to the shop and picked up a group of four drunk girls who were trying to give people high fives as they were going by. And this cyclist coming the other way went for a high five. And fell. Before he even got the high five, he just lost his balance and just fell right in front of him. And so that was a scary moment where he's like, oh my God, I'm going to cause an accident because of these crazy drunk girls. Well, it really is a lifestyle. It's more than just a job. It really is. Like, I wake up in the morning some days and like today, it's a Friday. It's sunny out. I know there's going to be tons of people out. So I was excited to come to work today. I would not like to do this for the rest of my life, but until I find something better, this is it.
That was KLW contributor Leah Rose catching a ride with pedicab driver Kobe Wilson in 2013. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Before we go, we'll hear a reading from San Francisco bookseller Alvin Orloff. He reads from his novel, Vulgarian Rhapsody.
It follows the misadventures of Harris, San Francisco's most annoying gay barfly and drag queen, after he's thrown out of his rent-controlled apartment by his long-suffering roommate. It takes place in 1999, however, and rents are soaring due to the dot-com boom, and Harris can't afford a place of his own and a telemarketer salary. So he's forced to try and inveigle one of his bizarre friends into letting them move in with him, which is easier said than done. I'm going to read the very first paragraph of the very first chapter, which introduces not only Harris, but the pathologically judgmental narrator who really has it in for Harris.
Bless us, yes, it was utterly meaningless.
You've probably seen Harris around town. He possesses a remarkable talent for just sort of turning up. Go to a magazine rack and there he'll be leafing through an Italian Vogue with a studied, almost theatrical air of nonchalance. Visit Macy's and you'll find him leisurely sniffing colognes with the judgmental scowl of a wine connoisseur. Drop by Walgreens and sure enough, there he is again, rolling his eyes at the skin rejuvenators as if expressing dissatisfaction for some invisible audience. You're apt to discover him lurking in the corner of dive bars, hanging out in the kitchen at house parties, and perusing the gourmet cheese at the supermarket. Harris is actually rather hard to avoid.
That was Alvin Orloff reading from Vulgarian Rhapsody. New Arrivals is produced by Lisa Morehouse, and you can hear more author readings at klw.org/newarrivals. Tune in tomorrow morning at 11. San Francisco Unified is considering school closures and mergers to avert a looming financial crisis.
Our voices are crucial. We are the future. We were promised a visit from Dr. Wayne to sit and listen to our student voices, but he hasn't followed through. Do our voices not matter? Do our voices hold no weight? Do I have no say in my education?
We'll hear excerpts from a meeting last week where members of the district's advisory committee expressed concern over a survey that's guiding the process. That's tomorrow morning at 11. Today's Cross Currents team includes Pat McMahon, Molly Blair Salier, James Rowlands, Ganadi Joe Johnson, Johanna Miyaki, Shirin Adil, Angela Johnston, Marissa Ortega Welch, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.